Hare Krishna. So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, chapter 7, and we're beginning the chapter. So I'll read the introduction, is that correct? Shall I do that? I'll read the introduction. It's nice. So the chapter is entitled, The Lord Begins His Tour of South India. In his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur summarizes the seventh chapter as follows. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order of life in the month of Magh, January, February, and went to Jagannath Puri in the month of Phalgun, February, March. He saw the Dol Yatra festival during the month of Phalgun, and in the month of Chaitra, he liberated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. During the month of Vaishak, he began to tour South India. When he proposed to travel to South India alone, Sri Nityananda Prabhu gave him a Brahmin assistant named Krishnadas. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was beginning his tour, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave him 4 sets of clothes and requested him to see Ramananda Rai, who was residing at that time on the bank of the river Godavari. Along with other devotees, Nityananda Prabhu accompanied the Lord to Alarnath, but there Lord Chaitanya left them all behind and went ahead with the Brahmana Krishnadas. The Lord began chanting the mantra, Krishna, 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 hey. In whatever village he spent the night, whenever a person came to see him in his shelter, the Lord implored him to preach the Krishna consciousness movement. After teaching the people of one village, the Lord proceeded to other villages to increase devotees. In this way, he finally reached Kurmastan. While there, he bestowed his causeless mercy upon a Brahmana called Kurma and cured another Brahmana named Vasudev, who was suffering from leprosy. After curing this Brahmana leper, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received the title Vasudeva Amrita Prada, meaning one who delivered nectar to the leper Vasudev. So that's the introduction. And we are reading from verse 1 until 27 today, so I guess we recite verse 1. Translation. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being very compassionate toward a Brahmana named Vasudev, cured him of leprosy. He transformed him into a beautiful man satisfied with devotional service. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the glorious Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's no purport, so we'll continue to verse 27. All glories to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. All glories to Advaita Acharya, and all glories to all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Text 3. After delivering Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Lord desired to go to South India to preach. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, text 4. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order during the waxing fortnight of the month of Magh. During the following month, Phalgun, he went to Jagannath Puri and resided there. Text 5. At the end of the month of Phalgun, he witnessed the Dol Yatra ceremony, and in his usual ecstatic love of God, he chanted and danced in various ways on the occasion. So Dol Yatra is basically the same time, the same tithi as Gorpanim. So of course Mahaprabhu wasn't celebrating Gorpanim. He wasn't celebrating his own birthday, but they have this festival called Dol Yatra, which is in certain parts of India, especially Bengal and Orissa, is celebrated with a lot of pomp and pageantry. Text 6. During the month of Chaitra, while living at Jagannath Puri, the Lord delivered Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and at the beginning of the next month, Vaishak, he decided to go to South India. So basically, Mahaprabhu left to go to South India in Vaishak, which is April, May. So it's understood that he left around April time in 1511. He took sannyas in 1510, in February, March, and then he took sannyas in 1511, April time, he left to go to South India. Text 7 to 8. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called all his devotees together and, holding them by the hand, humbly informed them, "You are all more dear to me than my life. I can give up my life, but to give you up is difficult for me. You are all my friends, and you have properly executed the duties of friends by bringing me here to Jagannath Puri and giving me the chance to see Lord Jagannath in the temple. Text 10. I now beg all of you for one bit of charity. Please give me permission to leave for a tour of South India. There's no purport, but it's just beautiful to see how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the source of everything, all of the Brahmandas. He's supporting everything. But he's asking his devotees for permission to go to South India. Such humility. And of course, Mahaprabhu is number one showing the example. But it's a sweetness of interaction. This mood of love amongst the devotees is very... Chaitanya Charitamrita is like poetry in motion. It's Bhagavatam in practice. And one of the key things that we really see is this loving relationship amongst the devotees, which is really brought out in such a wonderful way. The sweetness, the love, the softness, the refined nature of the interactions is very striking. So Mahaprabhu is begging all of you for one bit of charity. Sometimes when we, I'm not going to start giving the class now, but when we get into some position of responsibility or power, then rather than, the tendency may be to lord it over others. But Mahaprabhu is showing the example. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is worshipping him. All of his associates are around him. But he's begging them for a bit of charity, permission to go to South India. This is love. This is relationship. Text 11. I shall go to search out Vishwaroop. Please forgive me, but I want to go alone. I do not wish to take anyone with me. Until I return from Setubandha, all of you dear friends should remain at Jagannath Puri. Text 13. Knowing everything, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was aware that Vishwaroop had already passed away. A pretense of ignorance was necessary, however, so that he could go to South India and liberate the people there. So Mahaprabhu explained to his devotees that he was looking for Vishwaroop, his brother, who had left when Mahaprabhu was with his parents in Navadvip Mayapur. He told the devotees, I'm going to find Vishwaroop. But he knew that Vishwaroop had already left his body. He was called Shankararanya. He had taken sannyas in the Mayavadi school. But he left his body. Mahaprabhu knew, but this is the excuse that he used to go to South India. So often we see that even we have an external purpose for an activity, but also an internal purpose. So Mahaprabhu externally said he's going to find Vishwaroop, but internally he wanted to preach. He wanted to preach the cult of Krishna consciousness, and that's of course what he does. And that will be seen more as we read on in future chapters. But also he wanted to collect his devotees. He wanted to collect around India. There were various devotees who were dotted around. He wanted to associate with them, and he wanted to invite them to Puri, which was his headquarters. So he meets, for example, with Ramananda Rai soon, in the next chapter, famous chapter, probably one of the most powerful chapters in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 8, the talks between the Lord and Ramananda Rai, a real exposition of the key steps and elements of bhakti, up until the very highest echelons of Krishna consciousness. It's a real step-by-step guide. So Mahaprabhu meets Ramananda Rai and then invites him to come to Puri. So Ramananda Rai eventually goes to Puri. In the same way he goes to Venkata Bhatt in Rangashetra, and he brings Gopal Bhatt into his association. So in this way he's also collecting his disciples, he's collecting his associates, and engaging them in various missions. Text 14. Upon hearing this message from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the devotees became very unhappy and remained silent with sullen faces. Text 15. Nityananda Prabhu then said, how is it possible for you to go alone? Who can tolerate this? 16. Let one or two of us go with you, otherwise you may fall into the clutches of thieves and rogues along the way. They may be whomever you like, but two persons should go with you. Text 17. Indeed, I know all the paths to the different places of pilgrimage in South India. Just order me, and I shall go with you. Nityananda Prabhu had been on pilgrimage around India previously, so he knew the roads. So it would make sense for him to go with Mahaprabhu, but Mahaprabhu disagrees. Text 18. The Lord replied, I am simply a dancer, and you are the wire puller. However, you pull the wires to make me dance. However you pull the wires to make me dance, I shall dance in that way. Text 19. After accepting the sannyas order, I decided to go to Vrindavan, but you took me instead to the house of Advaita Prabhu. Text 20. While on the way to Jagannath Puri, you broke my sannyas staff. I know that all of you have great affection for me, but such things disturb my activities. So there's a famous place called Dandabanga. When Mahaprabhu took sannyas, they were traveling. Mahaprabhu was in ecstasy. He didn't notice. And actually they went to Shantipur, the house of Advaita Acharya. And then on their way to Puri, Lord Nityananda broke the danda of Mahaprabhu. And there are various reasons. Srila Prabhupada gives some explanations as to why that takes place. Other acharyas have also commented in various ways as to why Lord Nityananda broke the danda of Mahaprabhu, but he did. One explanation that Srila Prabhupada gives is that Lord Nityananda was making a statement that Mahaprabhu is above any of the varnas and ashrams. You can't place the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any ashram, even if it's a sannyas ashram, which is understood to be the highest of all. You can't pigeonhole the Lord. So he broke his danda. Actually, this place once, it's said that there's a deity of Mahaprabhu there, and if you take darshan of this deity, at Dandabanga, this deity of Mahaprabhu, then you'll go back to Godhead. You're assured of going back to Godhead. So once, I think it was here at the manor, devotees told me that devotees had a picture of this deity of Mahaprabhu from Dandabanga, and they were passing this picture around. And everyone was taking darshan and very happy at the thought that this was a ticket back to Godhead. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, they were trying to show Tamal Krishna Maharaj the picture, but he said, no, I don't want to see this picture. I don't want to see this picture. And they said, why, what? This is a ticket back to Godhead. Take darshan of Mahaprabhu. He said, no, I don't want to see this picture. I want to come back life after life to serve Srila Prabhupada. I don't want to go back to Godhead. So, say mama janmani janmani shure bhavatad bhakti rahai tuki tvai. So birth after birth, let me engage in devotional service. But Dandabanga is a famous place. Text 21. Jagannanda wants me to enjoy bodily sense gratification, and out of fear, I do whatever he tells me. 22. If I sometimes do something against his desire, out of anger, he will not talk to me for 3 days. 23. Being a sannyasi, I have a duty to lie down on the ground and to take a bath 3 times a day, even during the winter. But Mukunda becomes very unhappy when he sees my severe austerities. 24. Of course, Mukunda does not say anything, but I know that he is very unhappy within, and upon seeing him unhappy, I become twice as unhappy. 25. Although I am in the renounced order of life, and Damodar is a brahmachari, he still keeps a stick in his hand just to educate me. 26. According to Damodar, I'm still a neophyte as far as social etiquette is concerned. Therefore, he does not like my independent nature. 27. Damodar Pandit and others are more advanced in receiving the mercy of Lord Krishna. Therefore, they are independent of public opinion. As such, they want me to enjoy sense gratification, even though it be unethical. But since I am a poor sannyasi, I cannot abandon the duties of the renounced order, and therefore I follow them strictly. Purport. A brahmachari is supposed to assist a sannyasi. Therefore, a brahmachari should not try to instruct a sannyasi. This is the etiquette. Consequently, Dharmadhar should not have advised Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of his duty. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Grim Yat Kripatam Aham Bande Shri Gurundina Taranam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Binda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. I'd like to begin by requesting the mercy and the blessings of the assembled devotees that I can speak something. It's a privilege and honor to be here at Bhaktivedanta Manor and to sit here and try and say something to glorify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to glorify Radha Gokulananda and the Vaishnavas. So this is a wonderful section of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're seeing the beginnings of Mahaprabhu and his tour around South India. Mahaprabhu's life is split into three main sections. We see the 24 years when he's in his youth in Navadvip. He becomes a scholar, and then at the age of 16 he gets initiated, and then gets married twice. His first wife, of course, passes away, and then at the age of 24 he takes sannyas. Between 24 and 30, we understand, we often summarize that he was traveling. So he stations himself in Puri. Sachimata asks him not to go too far away, so he's in Puri. And then from Puri, which becomes his headquarters for the rest of his life, the next 24 years he travels. He begins in South India. He goes around Vidyanagar with Ramananda Rai, Rangashetra, Gopalbhatta, Venkatabhatta, etc. And then he goes up the west coast a little and then back to the east coast, visits Ramananda Rai again, and then back up to Puri. That journey, if you map it out, it's between April 1511. So yeah, I was thinking Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes sannyas in February 1511. So at that time he's 24 years old, and then soon after he turns 25. It's funny to say he's 25 years old. He had been on the planet for 25 years. And then a few months after taking sannyas, he begins his South Indian tour. That's around April 1511. And that tour takes, we often say 2 years, we summarize as 2 years. And it's unclear, there's no dates which are really given as to how long the tour lasted. But if we study, then we see that he spends, there's one rainy season, that's what's described. In Rangashetra, Mahaprabhu spends 4 months. During the rainy season, traditionally in India, no one travels. Heavy rains every day, it's not very good for walking. There's no trains and buses, no cars, so it's all walking on foot. So during the 4 months between July, August, September, October, approximately, mid-July to mid-October, they don't travel generally. So they stay in one place. So there's one rainy season which is described. That's Mahaprabhu stations himself for those 4 months in Rangashetra and then continues on his journey. So it's approximately 15 months between April 1511 and June 1512 that Mahaprabhu's traveling. And on his travels, he's continuously chanting Krishna's names. So as the introduction describes, Srila Prabhupada, he says, Mahaprabhu's, you know, as he's also on his way to Vrindavan, it describes through the Jarikanda forest, he's chanting the names of the Lord, and all of the animals, the birds and the beasts, they're all very attracted to Mahaprabhu because he's chanting Shuddha Naam. Everything related to Krishna is very attractive. So when we chant, with purity, when we conduct ourselves with purity, then naturally part of that attractive energy from Krishna is invested into the individual. So Mahaprabhu is chanting, Krishna, 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 He, Krishna, 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 He. So we can carry on. But actually, if you just do this, when you're going from one place to another, and you have some transition time, we say, it's very enlivening. It's very enlivening for the heart and soul. So Mahaprabhu is doing this. He's going from one place to another. He's meeting various devotees and spreading Krishna consciousness. Actually, he says, in the fifth line, he says, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava Rakshamam. And it's interesting, why is Lord Ram's name there? Why is Lord Ram's name mentioned in this? Because it's all Krishna, Krishna. Mahaprabhu's come to give the Ujjwala Rasa. Krishna. He's come to give Krishna, Krishna consciousness, and devotion to Krishna to the highest level. So where does Lord Ram come into this? Why does Mahaprabhu also chant Lord Ram's name? So one insight into this is actually Mahaprabhu's preaching. And in South India, there are many Ram Bhaktas, not many Krishna Bhaktas. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is preaching. So he's mentioning Lord Ram, he's mentioning Lord Ram's name so that the Ram Bhaktas will also be attracted. And then as they're attracted, then he'll grab the Ram Bhaktas and make them Krishna Bhaktas. So Mahaprabhu is the first bridge preacher. He's giving people Lord Ram, but actually grabbing them and making them Krishna Bhaktas. That's why he mentions Rama Raghava. Because sometimes we say, we also chant Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're chanting Lord Ram's name, but who is Lord Ram? It could be Raghupati Raghava, you know, the Ram of Ayodhya, who we have on our altar. It could be Balaram. But we understand that that Ram is the reservoir of all pleasure. It's Krishna. And the mantras reciprocate with our consciousness. Mantras are live. Everything is personal in Krishna consciousness. So mantras are a personality, and they reciprocate with our consciousness. So how we approach our practice, how we approach our mantra, however we approach our chanting, to that Krishna reciprocates. The mantra reciprocates. So Lord Ram for us is Krishna. But just honing in on the purport here, it's Damodar Pandit. Damodar Pandit is instructing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Srila Prabhupada is outlining the proper conduct, the proper culture and etiquette. And it seems as though here, Damodar Pandit, who's an associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's no ordinary person, he is transgressing that etiquette. Actually, later in the Antya Leela, we see that Damodar Pandit is again overstepping the mark. So there's a young boy who is visiting in the Antya Leela. I think it's the third chapter. There's a young boy who's visiting Mahaprabhu on a regular basis. And he's a very young, beautiful, attractive boy. And he loves Mahaprabhu's association because Mahaprabhu gives him love and affection. And especially young people, but I think all of us, we're all attracted to people and environments where we receive love and affection. So this young boy receives love and affection from Mahaprabhu. He loves Mahaprabhu. And he continues to go to him and he visits him every day. But it's described that the boy has one fault. Actually, it's not the fault of the boy. It's no one's fault, really. But his mother is young and very beautiful. And therefore, Damodar Pandit is making the point that this boy is visiting you and you're giving him so much attention, you're a sannyasi. People could understand or insinuate that you are giving this boy a special attention because you're somehow interested in the mother, and therefore is ill-advised. He's instructing Mahaprabhu, Damodar Pandit. So then Mahaprabhu, of course he takes on board Damodar Pandit's point. It's not a bad point, it's wise. But at the same time, Mahaprabhu gets sick of Damodar Pandit's constant meddling, his input, potentially you could say his controlling behavior. It's all out of love, of course, but everyone has their own personality. But it's here Damodar Pandit is coming at Mahaprabhu with a stick. Right? That's what it says. He's coming at Mahaprabhu with a stick. He keeps a stick in his hand just to educate me. Imagine educating the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a stick. So Mahaprabhu, by the Antya Leela, Mahaprabhu gets sick of him. And he says, okay, Damodar Pandit, I've got a service for you. You go to Navadweep and you take care of my mother. You serve my mother. You do whatever she needs. But I instruct you to go there. So basically he gets removed from Puri, reallocated. It brings about the point, and this is really what I wanted to speak about today, is about culture and etiquette. And here, Damodar Pandit is acting out of love. He's acting out of affection. His intentions are perfect. They can't be faulted. However, he's transcending culture and etiquette by instructing the Lord in this way. Sanatan Goswami instructs Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on one occasion. When their relationship was quite new, Sanatan Goswami had met Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu was on his way to Vrindavan. Actually, it's after he returns from the South Indian tour. Mahaprabhu's on his way to Vrindavan. And he's instructing. Mahaprabhu has a huge following. He's going to Vrindavan. And Sanatan Goswami says that it's not really proper for you to go with such a huge following to Vrindavan. We go to Vrindavan in order to do bhajan, in order for peace and quiet. But with such a huge number of people, it's not really appropriate. And Mahaprabhu, on that occasion, he takes it. He takes the correction. So it's an interesting distinction. The place where it's coming from is very, very important. Mahaprabhu described that Sanatan Goswami is really the epitome of Vaishnava conduct, of Vaishnava behavior. He says that the maintenance of Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. And Sanatan Goswami epitomizes this perfectly. Everything he does, everything he says, is perfect. So, actually, Mahaprabhu is very happy with Sanatan Goswami on various levels. Shishirada Gokulananda ki jai. So, Sanatan Goswami comes to visit Mahaprabhu in Puri. And he's staying with Haridas Thakur. And on one occasion, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu invites Sanatan Goswami to come for lunch. And Sanatan Goswami is very ecstatic. He's very happy, very privileged and honored to be invited for lunch. So he goes for lunch. But Sanatan Goswami has just arrived from Vrindavan. He goes through the Jarikanda forest. On his journey, he becomes diseased. His body gets these sores and they're oozing with pus. So he's very conscious that he's very unclean. And of course, there's also on his mind is the fact that he served under Nawab Hussain Shah for many, many years under a Muslim ruler. And therefore, dressed as a Muslim, had a beard, and engaged in various acts and ceremonies and in the culture of Islam. And therefore, in strict Hindu Brahminical culture, he was considered to be very unclean. And therefore, Sanatan Goswami was going to visit Mahaprabhu. He could have taken two routes. One route is going by Jagannath Puri temple, the Simhadwara gate, and the other route is going by the beach. Now, if you've ever been to Puri, there's a beautiful beach, but in the summer sun, the beach gets very hot. And they didn't wear shoes very much in those days. So he walked barefoot on the beach because he didn't want to go by the Simhadwara gate. He didn't want to go near the Jagannath Puri temple because he said, I'm so unclean, I'm so dirty on many levels. If I touch or even come close to any of the servants, the Saivites of Lord Jagannath, then they will become impure. They will become unclean. And in that way, they won't be able to do their service. Lord Jagannath's service will be interrupted. I don't want to go near there. So in Mahaprabhu, he asked Sanatana Goswami, which route did you take to come? Sanatana Goswami said, I came by the beach. And then they saw his feet were full of sores. But he didn't even notice because he was in such ecstasy at being invited to lunch by Mahaprabhu. So when Mahaprabhu saw his ecstasy, his excitement to meet him, when he saw the fact that he was avoiding the servants of Lord Jagannath becoming impure, and the consciousness, the humility, the mood of Sanatana Goswami, Mahaprabhu was very, very happy. And at that point he said, you're the epitome of Vaishnava etiquette and conduct. You're an example for everyone. Your humility breaks my heart, Mahaprabhu says to Rupa Sanatan at another point. So this is something that we need to really focus on in our Krishna consciousness. It's very significant. Correct conduct, the culture of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada said that he's come to create a cultural revolution. So what is a culture of Krishna consciousness? What is the correct etiquette of Krishna consciousness? So culture is broad principles. Etiquette is the details that make up that culture. So, for example, we may say that we should dance for Krishna. That's part of the culture of Krishna consciousness, chanting and dancing. But what is, how do you actually practice that? So we may say that there are various rules in relation to that dancing. Sometimes there are rules, sometimes there aren't rules. But we may say you dance in an orderly fashion with some formation. So something that we used to discuss when I was here in the Brahmacharya Ashram, dancing in some sort of formation. If you see the Rasa dance, it's very orderly. In eights, groups of eight, in a very organized way. So we should dance with grace, maybe not. We should dance in a way that's not dangerous. Maybe that will be more acceptable, you know, to everyone. So like that, there are various aspects of etiquette is very specific. The culture is very broad. Culture can be adjusted according to the time, place and circumstance, according to the situation. Etiquette is getting into the details. Another example, we may say that we should serve devotees prasadam. So rather than devotees serving themselves, you know, in Western culture there are buffets where you take for yourself. In Vedic culture, we're served prasadam. And ideally we're served in rows. So devotees sit down and they're served prasadam in rows. That's a cultural aspect. Well, serving devotees prasadam is a cultural aspect. Then when you get into the details, the etiquette of it, then we understand, okay, well, they should sit down in rows. Devotees are served. When you're serving, you shouldn't touch the spoon to the plate. The spoon becomes muchi. You shouldn't serve with your left hand. You should serve with your right hand. So there are many details. These details are important. Attention to detail is a sign of love. It makes us conscious. Many times we see that we become unconscious in our activities, in our day-to-day life. We're not thinking about what we're doing, we're just doing things according to previous habits which we may have developed. But getting into these details, first of all, makes us conscious. It helps us to be more in the mode of goodness. These details are there to elevate us to a mode of goodness style of living, to become suci in our lives, to become very conscious. So sometimes devotees say, you know, stop being so nitpicky, you know. Like Srinivas Prabhu just corrected the young man next to him, because this is culture, this is etiquette, and it makes a real difference. And I'll go on to say why. You know, once Srila Prabhupada, he was giving a class, and he said, if you're cultured but not educated, then you can come and you can practice Krishna consciousness. But if you're educated but you're not cultured, then no, don't come. Unless you're open to being educated, unless you're open to learning the culture of Krishna consciousness. So one thing that I always say to devotees, especially when they join the temple, is that we all have to be here to learn. We all have to be here to change. Because, like we said, Krishna consciousness is a cultural revolution. And there's so many, you know, when we see Western culture and we see real Vedic culture, they're diametrically opposed. It's really turning everything upside down in so many ways. You know, in modern culture, you know, like they said in the 60s, you couldn't trust anyone over 30. You know, that was the idea, that was the kind of philosophy. If they're over 30, then stay away. But in Vedic culture, we revere, we respect seniors. We search after their association, their wisdom. So in so many ways, things are really turned on their head. Tribhuvanath Prabhu once, he was an older brahmachari, and there was a young brahmachari, and in the old days, there used to be this culture of really respecting your elders. And that was exhibited or expressed. For example, when you see an elder, then you pay your obeisances to them. And the older devotee, he will accept those obeisances. That was a culture. So once Tribhuvanath Prabhu saw a younger brahmachari, he came in and he didn't pay his obeisances. So then Tribhuvanath Prabhu said, pay your obeisances. Why didn't you pay your obeisances? And then the devotee felt very embarrassed, and then he paid his obeisances. So someone who's looking very externally will think Tribhuvanath Prabhu is proud. He's saying, pay your obeisances. And it is very uncomfortable to say that to someone, pay your obeisances. But fundamentally, the reason why he was saying that was because this individual needs to learn culture. They need to learn to respect. They need to become humble. And that's why he's instructing them. That's why he's telling them it's for their benefit. It's not because he wants name, fame, glorification, adoration, distinction. It's because he's trying to teach and train and preserve a very important culture, a culture of respect. And that's really the essence of culture, is to respect. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. This is very, very important in Krishna consciousness, to learn to respect. It's the essence of culture. And why is it so important? It's very important because with respect comes humility. When we learn to respect everyone around us, and everyone deserves or is should be respected in different ways. If you see a sannyasi, then he should be respected in a particular way. Everyone pays their obeisances to a sannyasi. If you see a Srila Prabhupada disciple, then they're respected in a particular way. If you see the temple president in Vedic culture, in Prabhupada culture, Prabhupada instructed that everyone should pay obeisances to the temple president. So, because that respect should be there for the person who's organizing and arranging and inspiring so many things around the temple, so many facilities which we're benefiting from, They're a senior devotee. They should be respected. Older god brothers, you pay obeisances. Older devotees, you pay obeisances. This is the ideal culture. And Prabhupada set these things in place. He requested devotees to do these things. But over time, we see cultures are very easily lost, very quickly. That's the nature of this world. Sakale nehamatta yogo nashta parantapa. Krishna says that over time, the teachings are lost. But it's up to us to preserve the teachings. But it's important to know why these things are so important. Respect means humility, and humility is the essence of chanting Hare Krishna. And our goal in Krishna consciousness is to be able to chant purely. And a devotee who's serious is ready to do whatever it takes to be able to chant with affection, to chant with love. But how do you Kirtaniya Sadahari, how do you get this to the stage of Kirtaniya Sadahari? What do you need? You need Trinadapi Suni Chena Taroriva Sahishnuna Amani Na Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. So we really have to put ourselves in a situation, in a position where we really feel like Trinadapi Suni Chena, like a blade of grass, as tolerant as a tree. Ready to offer respects to all respects to others, but accept no respect in return. To be in that state of mind, to be in that consciousness, and only then, Kirtaniya Sadahari. So sometimes devotees think that these aspects of culture are superfluous. They're not so important. Or it's just older people wanting respect from younger people. Vanchakalps Prabhu. You know. Yeah, I don't need to say the whole mantra, you know, it's a drag, you know. We'll just summarize, you know. But you know, or when you pay obeisances, for example, I live in Hungary, I moved to Hungary some years ago, and my spiritual master has been emphasizing with devotees. Srila Shivaram Maharaj, he's emphasizing to devotees that when you pay your obeisances to the spiritual master, devotees just put the head on the floor and then up again, you know? They just touch the head on the floor and it's up again. But he's saying, where's the mantra? Namo Om Vishnu Padaya. You have to chant the mantra to your spiritual master to really pay your obeisances. Otherwise, it's just mechanical. And everyone should know that mechanical devotional service doesn't get us anywhere. Sorry? Time. Yeah, we're in such a rush. We're in constantly such a rush that we forget Krishna consciousness. That we forget the reason why we're actually here. Because everything we do is actually meant to bring about a transformation in the heart. And every aspect of our culture, if we really analyze it and think about it and meditate on it, delve into it and practice it, we see is actually there to bring about some transformation in the heart. So when you get down and you pay your obeisances and you say Namo Om Vishnu Padaya and you meditate on what the meaning of this mantra is, that I offer my respected, prostrated obeisances unto you because you're a great personality and I'm a dog in front of you, then that ingrains a consciousness of humility within yourself. I'm yours, I belong to you, and I'm nothing. Please instruct me, please guide me, please help me, because I need help, because I'm a fallen, conditioned soul. And I want Krishna. And I'm in front of you, O Vaishnava Thakura, I'm in front of you, and I want your mercy. Please give me your mercy. And in that state of mind, we can take shelter of Guru. We can take shelter of the Vaishnavas. We can take shelter ultimately of Krishna. And in that state of mind, we can chant Hare Krishna. And the reason I'm talking about chanting Hare Krishna specifically, of course, there are many aspects of Krishna consciousness that this helps us with. But chanting Hare Krishna is the key thing, is the most important activity that we do. And that's not just a cliche. It's not just something that you've heard in classes and in conversations a million and one times, but it's something that we have to really absorb in our hearts, that this is the most important activity. And of course, because today is the disappearance day of Haridas Thakur, the Namacharya. So Haridas Thakur is really the emblem of chanting Hare Krishna. The emblem of humility, therefore, also, because you can't be chanting Hare Krishna properly unless you're humble. Unless you're cultivating and developing humility in your heart and mind. So Haridas Thakur was extremely humble. Many, many examples are there in the scriptures, but time doesn't permit us to really delve into that. This whole idea of becoming gentlemen, Prabhupada wanted us all to be gentlemen and gentle ladies. Should the class finish? What time is? Yeah? Half eight. Because it says here 9. Sunday classes finish at 9, but maybe things have changed. The old. Yeah, we should change. This environment, this atmosphere of Vaishnava Sangha, association of devotees, cultivating the culture and the etiquette is a very, very powerful environment. Sometimes they say, I remember hearing many times, that 20, in terms of association, it should be 20, 60, 20. Have you heard that before? Is that just me? Who's heard that before? Yes, so quite a few devotees have heard that before. 20% with seniors, 60% with peers, and 20% with juniors. Yeah, so we hear that sometimes. I had one senior devotee, and he was saying, doesn't really make sense. We should associate with seniors as much as possible, particularly with advanced devotees. Grab their association, take their association, because advanced devotees lift us up in Krishna consciousness. Advanced devotees transform our Krishna consciousness. Advanced devotees show us how to walk, how to talk, how to behave, how to interact, and how to become Krishna conscious. And opening ourselves up to the correction of those devotees. One thing that we see sometimes is that in our circles, in our communities, devotees are unhappy when they're corrected. They feel affronted. And therefore, what we develop is a culture where no one wants to say anything to anyone. Because if I correct him, then he'll get upset and he won't talk to me. Because it's just not the culture where devotees are ready to be corrected. They're ready to learn. It's a very dangerous culture. Because then what we end up doing is that everyone is preserving their own space. They preserve their own egos, and they preserve their own conceptions, their own ways of doing things, and everyone becomes like an island. And then the idea of developing community, developing a real Vedic Vaishnava community, a community of Krishna consciousness, a community which is exhibiting the culture and etiquette like we see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is impossible. Because the sweetness, the love, the interaction between the Vaishnavas that we see in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita only comes when there's real humility. And that can only come when devotees are ready to learn. When they're ready to learn, a humble person's ready to learn. He knows, he has this conception, this understanding that I don't know. I don't know, and therefore I need to learn. I need to be trained. And that's especially important in the formative years of one's Krishna consciousness. But it's a theme that should run throughout our spiritual lives. I don't know, but I want to know. And then we can really chant. And as we're chanting, we have to be very... Just a few more words on Haridas Thakur and chanting the holy names, because it's his disappearance day. We have to be very focused when we're chanting and focused on what we want. Everything is in spiritual life, everything in life, you have to have a goal. It's like if you walk out the door and you want to go somewhere, the first thing you've got to know is, what's my destination? Right? If you walk out the door and you don't know where you're going to go, then you don't know if you're going to go left or right. You know, if you have a sat-nav, what do you put in? You need to know what your destination is, and then it can direct you. So in the same way, in spiritual life, very often we just pick up the bead bag. But what's the goal? Do we consider and think before we chant, okay, what is my goal here? What is my purpose? What is my aim? What do I want from this chanting? Do we really consider that question? So we need to be very clear. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gopakumara's guru, he comes on a few short occasions to visit his disciple. But whatever he says is instrumental in his disciple's advancement. And on one occasion he comes and he says, Yad yad sankalpa bhavatsa nija mantra japishyasi tat prabhavena tat sarvam. Tat prabhavena tat sarvam vancha titam chashetsati. He says, my dear son, my dear child, bhavatsa. Vatsa. It's a very nice word, like a calf. Is a vatsa. He says, my dear child, chant your mantra with a sankalpa, with a goal, with an aim. Nija mantra, your mantra, japishyasi, tat prabhavena, by the prabhav, by the effect, by the influence of this mantra, tat sarvam, all of your desires will be fulfilled. So by the power of chanting this mantra, Hare Krishna, all of your desires will be fulfilled. So first thing is you've got to be very careful what you desire. Yeah? Because material desires are very easy to fulfill. Krishna's more tentative about spiritual desires, because if you're a good devotee, then you want Krishna. But Krishna doesn't want to be captured cheaply. But if you have material desires, especially while you're chanting, Krishna will fulfill those material desires if you really want them and you keep asking for them. So you've got to be very careful what you desire and what you think about, especially when you're chanting. But more generally, in our spiritual life, we have to have a clear goal, clear desires, spiritual desires. And we have to cultivate those spiritual desires. What do I actually want in Krishna consciousness? What is my goal here? Is it just to have a roof over my head and some nice food and a few good mates to chit-chat with? Or do I really want the real thing? Do I want Krishna? So Raghupati Upadhyay, he is talking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he says a beautiful verse which really summarizes what our goal is. He says, Shyamameva param rupam puri madhupuri vara vaya keshorakam dhyayam adya eva parorasa. He says, Shyamameva param rupam, of all rupas, of all incarnations, of all forms of the Lord, Shyam Sundar Krishna is the topmost. So there's Krishna in Dwarka. It's very nice, very wonderful. And then there's Krishna in Mathura. But then there's Krishna in Vrindavan. When the Vrajvasis meet Krishna in Kurukshetra, the gopis say, we don't like this Krishna. You know, in this armor, kingly attire with a helmet and all of these external things. We want our Krishna. Our Krishna. That Vrindavan Krishna. Yeah, with a yellow dhoti, sash, Vajayanti Mala, peacock feather in his head. That's our Krishna. Simple cowherd boy Krishna. Shyam Sundar Krishna. That's who we want. And therefore with the ropes of love, they're pulling him back to Vrindavan. So Shyamam Eva Param Rupam Puri Madhupuri Vara. Which place? Puri, which place, which city, which town? Madhupuri. Madhupuri, what is madhu? Honey. That place which is dripping with nectar. Just meditate on that. That place which is dripping with nectar. So sweet. where we were saying yesterday, that place where every, and we know this, we hear this all the time, at least I used to hear this all the time here, that place where every step is a dance, every word is a song, and every day is a festival. That's Vrindavan. And there's always so many pastimes going on, which are ever fresh, ever new, and it's all revolving around the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. That place is where I want to go. That I want to go to Vrindavan. That is my desire. And that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. Very specific. Then, which Krishna? Okay, so we've got Shyamasundara Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna. But how old is he? Vaya Geshorakam Dhyayam. We should meditate Dhyayam on that Geshor Krishna. Yeah, so he's around 15 years old. Actually, 15 years and 9 months. That's Krishna's eternal age. And Adya Eva Parorasa. Of all of the rasas, as Ramananda Rai will explain in the 8th, Madhya 8, of all rasas, the Adi Ras, the Shingara Ras, the Madhurya Ras, on that rasa we should meditate, because ultimately that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give. So, with those specific desires, we should cultivate those desires. We say, Mora e Abhilas. Vilas kunje diyovas. That is the Abhilas. That is the desire of a devotee. So that has to become our desire. If it's not our desire, then we have to make it our desire. And how do we make it our desire? We have to read and chant about Krishna. With focus, with attention, and daily. And the more we do that, the more sincerity and absorption with which we do that, these desires will manifest. Many times we talk so much about anartha nivritti, anartha nivritti, anartha nivritti. Yeah? Getting rid of the material desires, purifying the heart, etc., etc., etc. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, forget about all this talk of anartha nivritti, focus on artha pravritti. Actually developing spiritual desires. Purification of the heart means replacing material desires with spiritual desires. So rather than focusing so much on the material, they say, don't think of a pink elephant. What do? You think of a pink elephant. So much focus on the anartas. Focus more on the positive. Focus more on Krishna. His name, form, qualities, pastimes and associates. And naturally, the desire to go to him and to serve him in more and more specific ways will naturally come in the heart and mind as we continuously, repeatedly hear and chant about him. And in that way, Krishna consciousness becomes very blissful. When we focus so much on the anartas and the problems and the issues and the politics and this and that, it's draining our energy, and it's draining the energy of everyone around us. It doesn't bring any kind of positivity. But when we're actually practicing Krishna consciousness, and we don't become a member of the International Society of Anartha Consciousness, or the International Society of Problem Consciousness, but actually the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, then actually spiritual life is very blissful, is very wonderful, very enlivening. And we can then bring that energy and that inspiration to our environments and bring an uplifting force. And in that way, please the acharyas like Haridas Thakur and actually become Krishna conscious. Because we have to remind ourselves regularly about why we're here. What is our purpose for being in this temple room on a Sunday morning when maybe previously you would have been sitting, laying in bed? What is your purpose? We have to see my purpose is to become Krishna conscious. And at the end of my life, I want to be a lover of Krishna. I want to be mad after Krishna. Prabhupada said, we have to be mad after Krishna. Mad after Krishna. What does that mean? And how to actually get there? And therefore we have to chart our lives, plan our lives in such a way, whatever phase of life we're in, whatever our duties may be or responsibilities, we have to see that by the time I die, before. Because one thing is becoming mad after Krishna, but there's a lot more that comes after that too. But how do I get to that stage in this life? And that has to be the goal of every follower of Srila Prabhupada, because that's what Prabhupada wanted. That's what Prabhupada wanted from all of us, and expected from all of us. I'll stop. I could go on. But are there any quick comments, questions, corrections?
Hare Krishna. I just wanted to ask that you were saying about respecting the devotees, we should have respect for the devotees. It was more of a comment, really. Rupa Goswami explains that respect should be there for everybody, but there should also be discrimination. So some we just respect in the mind, some it's a formal paying of obeisances, and then the challenge is, can you discern which devotee to take shelter of, whose heart is completely devoid? And that's your that's the onus is on you to do that. So and I think respect is proactive, it's not reactive. I'll respect him, but if he's really horrible to me, then he's not going to get any respect off me. Proactively respectful is, I've decided already I'm going to be like that. It doesn't matter where anybody else is going to behave like that.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Yeah, Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Instruction, Dikshashi Chet Panati Bis Chabajanta Misham, how to respect devotees. And he gives a very short summary on who to respect and how to respect them. So if someone's chanting the holy names, then you respect them in the mind. If someone's worshipping the deity, they're second initiated, etc., then you pay your obeisances to them. But that person, and this goes back to the point of this 20-60-20, that person who's devoid of envy, meaning someone who's really advanced, unottamadhikari, that person, their association, you search after. And if you're really serious, then you die after their association. Because that association rubs off. That association affects the heart, it stirs the heart. And what is in their heart enters your heart. The degree to which you're keen and eager for it, to that degree you're open, and to that degree, that same desire, same, but that desire enters into your heart too. So that person, Rupa Goswami says, get their association. Chase after their association. Be very eager for that association. Put everything else aside for that association. Because we need it. We need it. Especially if we want to get somewhere quick. We can do it ourselves, but it may take lifetimes. But that's the facility. You know, Saraswati Thakur said that institution is a necessary evil. You know, there's a society of devotees that needs some sort of management and government. Many people practice bhakti alone. And there's some great benefits of practicing bhakti alone. You know, developing your loving connection with Krishna. But the sangha of Vaishnavas is so powerful, so purifying, but so instructive and inspiring. And that's why Prabhupada created this society, this forum within which we can associate and we can cultivate Krishna consciousness. And we have so many amazing, wonderful senior devotees from whose inspiration we can gain so much. We can gain so much inspiration. And actually, it's a cheat. It's a cheat way to advance in Krishna consciousness. Because they can just give you whatever they got. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says that someone who's at Nishta, they can give Shraddha to someone else. Someone who's at Bhava can give Nishta. Although sometimes devotees say, I think another Acharya says they can give Bhava, and someone who's at Prema can give Prema. So, yeah. That's the power of association. So, yeah, thank you, Dr. Krishnapur. Ms. Kinchinapur.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a wonderful class. I don't know how much time we've got. If I can have a two-part question here. One is, we see a lot of devotees, they once they get engaged in, like, management, managing projects and departments, and there's also a mood, especially in big temples, to expand your operations and, you know, spread it far and wide and things like that, and then responsibilities come, and, you know, especially with devotees, meetings can go on any time of the day, you know, from morning to evening, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that whole, like you mentioned about developing that whole hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna, things like that, focusing on Krishna whilst chanting, because sometimes services can get so engrossing, they permeate into your consciousness, even when you're chanting or doing your sadhana, and, you know, it's not as focused. How do you balance it? Like, should we revise how we expand, and should we, like, maybe scale down and go a bit slowly, or, like, you know, how do you balance, like, you know, sort of doing service nicely and managing, whilst also having that kind of internal bhajan mood as well?
First point that I would say is that whether you're a manager, a leader, a temple cleaner, a book distributor, a preacher, whatever you are, the first thing is you've got to be a devotee. The first thing is you've got to be a Vaishnava. The first thing is that your goal has to be to love Krishna. And actually everything should be used to try and support those goals. So whatever service you're doing it as a loving offering to Guru and Krishna. And you're doing it in Krishna consciousness. So if I'm managing a project, if I'm managing a temple or a department, then I'm doing this, but I'm doing it because I want to please Radha Gokulananda, because I want to please Srila Prabhupada, because I want to please the Vaishnavas. When we do it in that consciousness, then it should nourish. Because sometimes we talk about service and sadhana, and like they're opposing each other. But we need to figure out a way that the sadhana actually, the service supports and nourishes our spiritual practice. So that's the first point that I'd make. Second point is that, Srila Prabhupada has given us a preaching mission. And it's intense. And it should be that way. But serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching mission is a bridge to Radha and Krishna. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. So as we serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we serve his preaching mission in so many various ways, he reveals Radha and Krishna to us. He reveals himself, just like he does with Ramananda Rai, he reveals himself to be non-different to Radha and Krishna. He's the bridge. He's the bridge to Radha and Krishna. So serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission does reveal Radha and Krishna to us, but we need to balance our lives. Balance is very important. It's not easy. But we have to develop the expertise. And, you know, if you really want to be Krishna conscious, then you'll work it out. It's easy to get lost in so many other things. But if your goal remains, I want to be a lover of Krishna, then somehow we find a balance. We have to find a balance. And that means we have to have good quality sadhana. And that means at least 16 rounds with attention. Attention is very, very important. To cultivate attention, to hear the holy name. Because if you want to, you know, they say, from Naam comes Rupa, comes Guna, and then Leela. If you don't have attention, if you can't focus and just hear the holy name, then Rupa will never come. It's not possible. So they talk about building a foundation of the building. If you're going to build a building, then it requires a foundation. The foundation of chanting Hare Krishna is hearing the holy name with attention. There's nothing else going on. You're simply hearing the holy name. Without that, you can't move forward. So it's very important to have that space in your life and to cultivate it from the beginning, where you have that 2 hours where you can just chant with focus and attention and read and study at least an hour a day, if not two. And then the rest of the day you can serve your heart out and serve the mission. But if you don't balance, then it falls apart. And we see that. We see that many times. That devotees, they serve hard for some time, and then soon after it falls apart. And they lose inspiration, they lose a serving spirit, and they distance themselves. So balance. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yukta hara viharasya, yukta chesasya karmasu, yukta svapna vabodasya, yoga bhavati dukkha. If you want to become free from the pangs of material existence, then balance in eating, sleeping, work and recreation are fundamental in spiritual life. So it should be discussed amongst the devotees as to how we can balance our lives. Not too much one way, not too much the other way. There should be intensity in preaching and intensity in sadhana. And these two work together hand in hand and should complement one another. And if you're a manager, I've experienced it many times, you know, if you're Krishna conscious, then Krishna gives you solutions. Krishna sorts problems out. We think we're the doer, so I got to sort this out. I got to do this and I got to do that. But if you just say, hey, Krishna, you know, I want to hear about you. I want to read about you. But I've got so many things to do. Please just help me out. You know, and Krishna comes in and he's expert, you know. We know nothing. He can solve problems with a click of a finger. So learning how to make everything we do real devotional service for the pleasure of Krishna, in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna intervenes in our lives much more. My main service these days is book distribution. And you're having a tough day. But why am I having a tough day? Because I'm forgetting Krishna. If I'm in remembrance of Krishna, then either books are flying out, because Krishna's making it happen, he's sending people, or they're not going out, that's up to him. But I'm thinking of Krishna, so what's the loss? What's the loss? Everything, you're a winner either way. So the only problem is when we forget Krishna. That's the only problem. What's that verse, 14:1, Adilila? How does it begin? Katanchana smrite yasmin dushkaram sukaram bhavet vishmrite viparitam syat shri chaitanya namamitam. That when you forget Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then easy things become difficult. But when you simply remember him, and it's so easy, remember Krishna, remember Mahaprabhu, you can do that with a click of a finger. When you remember him, then difficult things become easy. And it really is that simple, but we have to just cultivate it. And it requires cultivation. It requires repeated, daily, hourly, minutely, if that's a word, it's not. But anyway, cultivation, minutely. Cultivation. But that's what Prabhupada says in Nectar of Instruction 5. He says, train the mind. Yes. Last sentence. Yeah. He says 5 times in that purport, train the mind. Short purport. Train the mind. And that's Krishna consciousness. Grantrachi Chitna Chaitanya Charitamrita ki Srila Prabhupada ki Nittai Gaur Premanandi.